There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan.
My brother from another mother.
On FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Friday. Glad to have you here. Phone number and the text line, well, same as they've been for, well, 17 years. Which, by the way, we just were back celebrating our birthday in the conference room, birthday room, whatever, in the back here. And checking our social media stuff over at Facebook.com. Thank you for the well wishes. Yeah, 17 years for FM Talk 106.5 as of today. You may ask yourself, May the 1st, this is the high holy communist holiday. Well, understand that I was a smart aleck enough that I had about a two and a half week window where I could launch this station. I'd worked about 6 to 8 months while we were still in another format, and I'd built this out and all the shows and the networking and the satellites and all that stuff. And I knew that I needed to launch it by a certain time, but I looked at the calendar, and because I was, gosh, a lot younger back then, smart aleck, I said, May 1st, May Day, that's the day we're going to launch the station. And we sure did. Launched it on May 1st in 2009. So, but thank you for all the well wishes. We appreciate it. Yeah, and get through on the text line or the phone line, 251-343-0106. Also with the FM Talk 106.5 app. You can always leave us a talkback message. You'll see a there on the front page of the app, there's a microphone icon. If you'll press that, lets you record a message, emails it to the show, and we can play it back here on the air. All right, leadoff batter on today's show, and I'd love to get this guy in studio. It's always fun. Running for District 34, you know him, you love him, Coach Rusty Glover. Good to see you, sir.
Good to be here, Sean. Good to be here with you.
It's lots to talk about on today's show. First of all, I said like last time I was talking about you, you know you educated... It's got to be neat as a teacher, obviously, to have students say what you meant to them. But you educated the constituency at the same time. It's a good thing.
That's true. It's true. It's been very helpful when you run for office and you have so many parents of students, and students are now voting, and actually quite a few children of students who are voting, and so that helps quite a bit, and there's a lot of supporters in those categories.
And we'll maybe have a little extra time here to get into civics discussion, because I'd love to have that with you. But you represented the district for over a decade.
Yes.
Let's talk about that time, and then you coming back and running for that same seat.
Well, you know, I represented three terms in the Senate. I enjoyed it. My predecessors, Ann Betzel and Hap Meyer, served three terms and got out. I served three terms and got out. And I got out in the running for lieutenant governor. Mm-hmm. And that was very interesting. I enjoyed it quite a bit. Of course, I was outspent 10 to 1 and 11 to 1 by my two opponents. And so that part was not fun. But to meet people from around the state, to speak at the Republican women, the Republican Executive Committee meetings across the state, and meet so many people, good, solid conservative Republicans all over the state, it was quite an experience. And I was doing that for about 2 years. And so I really enjoyed doing that.
Did you learn things there about Alabama voters, Alabamians that you didn't know going into that lieutenant governor's race? Or was it reinforcing things you already
knew? It was pretty much reinforcing. Of course, my speech that I would give was the same speech that I started off with. And so it was very repetitious. But it was interesting also to hear all of the other candidates give their spiel. You know, their 2 minute, their 5 minute, their, unfortunately, their 15 and 20 minutes in some cases. I was, remember, in Winston County one night, there was a forum and there was about 25 candidates, and they were given about 8 minutes apiece. And there was one statewide judicial candidate, who was unopposed and went about 20 minutes. And so people were kind of moving around, looking around, very uncomfortable, trying to make noises, trying to maybe get the attention of the speaker. And it didn't work. We went about 20 minutes. I'll never forget that. But it was great. You know, you haven't lived as a candidate until you go to the Winston Chitlin Supper. And I went to that three different times. And it's held at Meek High School. It's a fundraiser for their band.
Okay.
And all the politicians, statewide candidates, they're all up there, local and statewide. And they want to put you on the spot. They want to make sure that you...
Winston see
you,
County.
You see you squirm eating chitlins. And so I had a candidate for the House, State House, and Mayor Battle from Houston, from Huntsville. And one of the photographers and newspaper guys had us all three together and wanted to video and take pictures of us eating chitlins for the first time. And so I did. It was not all that great. And the next two times I went for the alternative of fried chicken, which is an alternative. So most people eat fried chicken at the chitlin supper.
So, well, then I'd be in because Lord knows I love fried chicken. So you think about the time you spent, three terms there. Mm-hmm. Going back now, if you're elected, is it... things that you were working on then that you want to do? Is it a new slate of ideas you have for our district?
Well, basically, you know, I want to be there and be a part of supporting the Mobile-Baldwin area. We have a lot of things that we need to get accomplished. Highway 45 is the most dangerous road in the state of Alabama. There's just no argument there. It is, and it has to be some improvements, if not a four-laning it. Highway 158, which is the bypass from Highway 98, has to be, that 6 or 7 miles has to be completed to Mississippi. Dangerous accidents, deadly accidents that are happening there in recent days.
Where Schillinger comes in or whatever, and it necks down.
It's Schillinger to the Mississippi line. It is two lanes, and it's got to be four lane. And of course, protecting those dollars that have been allocated to complete the I-10 bridge on the state level, we've got to make sure that we get the attention to make sure those dollars are in place. And it's tough sometimes being, Mobile and Baldwin County together is 13% of the House and Senate, and so we're at a disadvantage. Sometimes they look at us as the old redheaded stepchildren, or whatnot. And so we have to pretty much fight for everything we get, and making friendships and working with our colleagues in other parts and other sections of the state is very important. I have a good relationship with all the members who are up there now, some that I served with before, some that I met when I was on the campaign trail in 18. Mm-hmm. I met and I have a good relationship with, and I look forward to working with them, and so we can get some things done for our area.
You talk about that 13%, and I sit and stomp my foot about that stuff all the time here, and even talk about the density of appointed positions. I think Marshall County has more appointed people than the entirety of the rest of the state.
That's right.
But at the same time, I think we have a reason to talk because we're a cash cow for the state.
Yes.
So, but there's not a mechanism that I know to say, hey, we bring in this much of revenue to the state, therefore we have this much say. Right. It's like we bring in the revenue, but we still just have the 13% representation.
Right. To have more influence, it would take legislation, which we would be outnumbered.
They wouldn't let it happen,
that point.
Right. So how do you talk about those relationships? That must be the way to get, that's the only mechanism. I would like it to be like, hey, they bring them in so much money, we need to give these people in Southwest Alabama more voice. But like you said, that's not happening. So how do you get things done?
Well, that's in using relationships, using the power of the Senate. A senator can, and House members have a certain degree of power too. It may take three or four to work together I wouldn't want to say threaten, but to make sure that, if you don't listen to our needs, we're not going to get anything accomplished today. Mm-hmm. And we did that. I mean, the current Judge Ben Brooks and I shut down the Senate for 2 or 3 days over homeowners insurance. We had some bills that was to help lower the cost of homeowner insurance, and we shut the place down for 3 days. And so no legislator, no senator wants to see the legislature shut down, the Senate shut down, because they have bills. And so you have this time frame. You have your time frame to get your bills passed. And if you shut down the Senate, that's going to hurt their ability to pass their general bills. They're local bills.
That's how you apply pressure.
And that's how you apply pressure. And you need a coordinated it's tough to do it by one person. So having a good, solid, you know, Mobile, Baldwin County delegation, those two delegations together working on the same page is very important.
Yeah, you mentioned Highway 45, which is something that I've been squawking about, I think, forever here on this radio station. Jeff does as well.
Yes.
You know, you could anecdotally go, there shouldn't be the number of crosses along a section of Alabama Highway.
Right.
I mean, that should tell you something, let alone driving it. It is, I've asked this question too, from a state's perspective, is it public safety versus revenue, meaning when they do a paving project, expansion project, we're going to hear like the West Alabama Corridor and all these things that might bring business and might do all these things. But it seems to me like public safety is the prime directive. So here's one of the deadliest highways in the state of Alabama.
Right.
If it's a public safety perspective, that should be the top of the triage list.
Exactly. And back when I was in the House, I served one term in the House. The two major bills I passed when I was in the House were bills that were compromises that were demanded by environmental groups over the watershed to make sure it was safe to conduct construction of a highway. And at that point, the objective was safety. I'd had students, I'd had parents of students, people in our church, people in our community killed. I mean, I personally knew all these people killed on Bloody 98.
Yeah.
And so I was very passionate about that. But working alongside, I had allies in the real estate folks, the Chamber of Commerce, county commissioners. They were looking forward to having that bypass there so they could develop. So working with safety and development, economic development, working hand in hand, we were able to get that completed. And I would love to see something, for us to come up with something for Highway 45 to maybe bring forth more allies.
So, okay, that's interesting. Yeah, build a coalition instead of just somebody like me squawking about the public safety part of it. Say we could do this at the same time. We can enhance that. Coming right back, more with a candidate, District 34 coach, State Senator Rusty Glover.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:21 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Continue our discussion with Rusty Glover, District 34 Senate candidate. Been there before. Reminder, too, if people want to get more information on your campaign, where do they go?
Well, we're on Facebook, Instagram, and electrustyglover.com.
So get out there, get more information. Now, reminding folks, just a side note, alabamavotes.gov, I've talked about it so many times here. Even if you know everything, you know that I'm in and I know where I'm voting and all that, y'all just go there just for fun. Take 5 minutes, go in there, put your information in, just confirm that. It's so easy now to do. I want to read a couple texts here, and this is something that you and I talked about, the passing of your father.
Yes.
And this texture says, Rusty's father was a great influence on many DIP students that attended BC Rain. I was a graduate in 1971. His recent passing was a huge loss to the Red Raider Nation. So condolences from
all of
us.
I appreciate that.
Jerry wants to know your take on the Big Creek Lake debacle.
Well, there was a compromise that was made, and I was very disappointed. I have a lot of empathy for those who have purchased boats. Mm-hmm. And, for instance, my son-in-law, was taking my grandson out on the lake.
Mm-hmm.
He was 1.5 years old and got a little life jacket on, but he'll never remember that because it's been shut down. Those that have invested and bought boats, and they can't use them.
Right.
Now they have to spend money renting a boat. And I have a lot of empathy for those who got shut out of that compromise, who will not be able to participate because they're not able to use their own boats.
Yeah.
That's who I give empathy to.
Yeah, and we are a republic built on compromise, of course. But I look at that, and to me, the feeling of looking through what came out, and not a legal mind, but we didn't answer the seminal question.
Mm-hmm.
the way this works? Because it's giving a – is it the state – I mean, the way it's read to me, right. Okay, the state says, well, we got – it is – navigable water state, but we're going to give you lease rights mm-hmm. on the right. We didn't go back and answer the question: can a entity other than the state take away the right of public access to public water?
That's right. That's right.
Like we punted on that's that. Right. It felt like
that's right. That's right. And like I said, yeah, compromise. You know, folks get half of what they wanted, but the folks that are getting shut out, they're getting nothing.
Right. And the compromise to me though would be okay. We have this new question. We have this new question for at Washington level, state level. We have a new question, and this side wants this, and we arrive at some kind of decision in between. It is the fabric of our republic. But where something was, it was 100% the law of saying it's navigable water,
yes.
To then say it is, but we're leasing it to these people, and they have the right for
right.
It's not even. It's not like Big Creek Lake just started to exist. Now let's ask the question of who gets to use it and how. This is a thing that was done, traditional use, and now we've gone back. So it didn't...
It's frustrating. It's very frustrating for those folks.
Talk about your leadership style and that discussion that has come up, different leadership styles. What is yours? I mean, if we had to brand your leadership style, if you're elected back to the Senate.
Well, I chaired committees, local delegation, probably over half the time that I was up there. A small business, I chaired that, but I was more interested in local government mm-hmm. and being the chair of the local delegation, which I did, like I said, more than half the time I was there. But I think being a part of the legislature, being a part of the Senate, I think it has some responsibilities to the people. People have problems. We call them constituent services, people mm-hmm. who have problems with the bureaucracy, people who are hardworking taxpayer people who have a problem with, they get caught up in something, unintended consequences of a bill that was passed the year mm-hmm. before last or 10 years before, and they need help. And they need someone to call, because when they call the state bureaucracy, they get a answer machine that doesn't return their calls mm-hmm. most times, or they just get the runaround. And so if my office can make that call, and I call that director, we're going to have action. And it may be a situation where the person, my constituent, is in the wrong, and it's nothing can happen.
Right.
But they need to know that we're going to be advocates for them mm-hmm. and working. Yes, a voting, have a conservative voting record, not voting for taxes, which I didn't, contrary to the commercial. I never voted for taxes.
Talk about some of those. So, I mean, these allegations made, you voted for taxes.
Yeah. Yeah. I never voted for a tax. Apparently, this group out of Virginia or whatnot, when their research, they found that I was on record voting for a tax. It was a local bill for Baldwin County. What we traditionally do as legislators is we abstain on bills that are being voted on specifically for other counties that have nothing to do with our own county.
Right, right.
And that's because Phil Williams, you know, who's mm-hmm. on Jeff Poor Show for mm-hmm. years, as a senator, he voted yes on generally all the local bills. And so his opponent, when he ran for reelection, they had a graphic said that he'd vote for $64 or $55 million worth of taxes. It was all these local bills added up together over a 10 or 20 year period or whatever. And so but even before then I knew you abstain. There's no point in getting involved in somebody else's, that's their business if that's what they want. Mm-hmm. It was a penny sales tax for schools.
Yeah.
And it had a 5-year sunset.
Mm-hmm.
It did not have anything to do with my constituents. The commercial says you are paying, or Alabama was paying. Totally ridiculous. Another allegation was that I had voted for a fee or tax on construction. That bill was voted 29-0. It's a reason why it was 29-0. The industry asked us to put in a small fee for construction projects that would go to the community colleges, which were educating those in the field. They're trying to build up their field, and so it was...
They were asking y'all to vote them a tax to...
The industry asked us to vote for it, and this commercial is bashing me for voting for it. It's the most ridiculous thing. And, of course, it leads off with the pay raise, legislative pay raise. And what they do not say is that I co-sponsored a bill that would end the pay raise. And not only did I co-sponsor it, I voted for it. When it came to a referendum, because it was a constitutional amendment, I decided to vote yes because I didn't want a no vote at the ballot box to counter or cross out someone who felt like it needed to go. I mean, that's how much I felt about going to the people on that particular issue. And
you wanted it to be voted on.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And the thing was, you know, people look at it as, you know, 62%. What it was is the legislature had not had a pay raise in like 17 years. And most of the money that we were getting went into the expenses of the office. So we were getting like, I mean, I was staying in a $32 a night hotel and still only coming out with about $7,000 or $8,000 a year because of the expenses of the office.
Right.
And, of course, contrary to what many people believe, the legislatures, they have no – it's no retirement. There's no pension involved in the legislature. And insurance, you pay the full amount for the state insurance. So you don't – pay.
You have state insurance, but you don't have a copay.
That's right. You don't. And, well, you don't have to – like where a teacher may pay – $275, $300 a month for insurance. But that's subsidized by the taxpayers, the rest of it. Well, if you're a legislator, you can be on the state insurance, but you have to pay the full $1,500 or $1,800, whatever the full cost is. So very few legislators take advantage of that because they have plans of their own that may be better. And most of them are retired anyway, and they're on their own retirement. But it's ridiculous, and it's. They're going to spend probably $2 million, this group.
You know what? I know I told you. Like, can you stay after?
Sure.
Go to the news and come back more because there's more meat on this bone I want to get at when we return right here on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:36, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Friday segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. That's my man Trey. So we're 17 today, so 1-800-GOT-JUNK's pushing 19, maybe pushing 20 years of getting junk gone in Mobile and Baldwin County. Trey, buddy, homeboy here, has been doing it all these years, and family business, family people involved in it. And I've told you this before. I've used them personally, used them with this radio station, and they're the kind of people you don't mind having in your home. You know, and I've said I've always been funny about that. Who's in the home? Like, they're just a great conscientious group of people to the point, too, not only they get the junk gone. I think one time, so we used them with the radio station to clean out a storage unit. So they got all the junk out there that we didn't need. They get it all gone. And then afterwards, get this. Have you ever gotten a deposit back from a storage unit? People say no. Well, we did because they had not only did they take all the junk out, they swept out and cleaned out. The storage unit looked better than when we rented the thing. I mean, that's the kind of conscientious workers they have with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. So it's junk in your house, at a storage unit, an office, even big stuff around the house, like a giant trampoline, a swing. You know, if you have the swing set and your youngest child is in college, maybe it's time to let the thing go. If you've got a big storage building in the backyard, maybe you bought a new property, you know, a new house, and you don't want any of that stuff, they can come get the big stuff around a house as well. They can tackle those projects for you. So all you got to do is make the appointment, and it is an appointment. It's not this sometime between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., sometime between Wednesday and Friday, they'll be there. No, it's an actual appointment. They find a day that works for you, a time that works for you, set an appointment. They show up. All you got to do is point at the junk you want gone, quote your price right there on the spot. Say yes, they get to work and get it done. So their name is the number, 1-800-GOT-JUNK, or you can go online, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com, and get an appointment either today, if they got space, or maybe next week, get that junk gone. So check them out and tell Trey I said hello. All right, continue our conversation with Rusty Glover, a District 34 candidate. He's been there, and he's coming back to another bite at the apple. If you went in here, your relationships, you said some of those relationships still exist?
Yes, several of them are still there. I remember when I left in 18, we had about eight conservative would be considered more conservative senators left when I did. Bill Hightower was running for governor. I was running for lieutenant governor. Paul Busman was defeated for re-election, and Paul Sanford and Williams and Brubaker mm-hmm. all decided not to run. Mm-hmm. And a lot of they were just disgusted at the system. They just could not. We just could not get a lot of what we needed. A conservative. Our conservative agenda going, and it was very frustrating for them, and they felt like it was time to leave. I hate to say the word useless, helpless, but they were in that position.
Well, and people look at this, it gets discussed a lot here. We are a Republican supermajority state,
right.
And we look at states that aren't a supermajority, and they have more conservative legislation go through than we do in the state that is chock-a-block full of people that at least tell us that they're super conservative.
Yes, and then the frustration of having Bobby Singleton and Smitherman, taking the show.
They're
filibustering, and we're not.
And that could be stopped.
It could be stopped. We have the votes to cloture. But what happens?
Why aren't we doing it?
When you cloture, it does take minutes, time, and. It takes away from those days where you have a lot of non-controversial bills and you go through about 20 bills a day. You got all these local bills. And when you cloture them, they'll go through their what they can do and shut things down. But sometimes it just gets to the point we have to cloture. And when we first took over in 2010, or at the 2010 election, so it'll be the 2011, I mean, we were cloturing three or four times a day, easy, sometimes more than that. I mean, we cloture many, many times. We cloture more in a week than we cloture probably in the last 2-3 years that I was up there. I mean, we rarely ever did that. And so that just opened the door to the Democrat filibuster and just shutting things down. And a lot of that can be attributed to, it wasn't necessarily bills that they were against, but the lobbyists. There's some of the lobbyists, high-power lobbyists, that want to slow things down because they want to say slow things down so certain bills won't pass so they can get those customers back the next year. Mm-hmm. That happens.
Wait.
It happens.
Okay, wait. So they slow a bill down because they're getting paid to lobby for
it
this year.
Sure.
If it doesn't pass, they get to lobby for it next year.
That's right. They get that business back. Yes, that happens. And I tell you,
devious.
You're talking about that commercial, the theme of the commercial about the pay raise. If it was about pay that I wanted, I would have become a lobbyist when I got out. I was mm-hmm. offered twice and one pretty lucrative amount of money, but that's not what I want to do. I want to serve the people. I want to be there and be a part of making things better, being there to serve my constituents and to be a part of that world, which is like a different world, the lobbying world. And I don't want to be too critical of lobbyists. They're representing people who are paying them. And sometimes they're for pretty good causes. There's some good causes out there. There's some really great lobbyists. Others, the public would not agree with a lot of things that they're pushing, but they're good, for the most part, most of them are good people.
Well, I mean, you and I were talking maybe during a news break. I for long on the show have said, I don't have a problem with lobbyists because mm-hmm. I know what they're about. Mm-hmm. It makes sense to me. Okay. I'm representing this thing. I want to get done. It's mm-hmm. clear. Mm-hmm. It's the elected official that plays ball or doesn't play.
That's right.
I mean, it's obvious to me, the opinion of the lobbyist.
Yep.
I know it's their opinion. They want this thing.
Yep.
The thing I don't – the disconnect for me is how much influence and how they inflect on that elected official to make them – are they changing – the perfect world would be if I had an idea that I was already agreed with, mm-hmm. a lobbyist came in and did lots of patting me on the back and saying how great I was, and I'm still voting the same way.
Right.
But it's the ones that change that I wonder.
Yes. Yeah, the ones that – when you can be flipped by one and again, a lot of them are representing – our constituents, and that's something that you have to have a lot of wisdom as a legislator to differentiate between your constituents' concerns and just their entity that's paying them's concerns. And so that's a craft. You have to do that. I just want to be up there to represent the people and not just the special interests that are. So many of them do fall into.
I think about it. You talk about service and your time in the Senate before in the House, but 25 years in education,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, 25 years, What is it gives you insight into education policy in Alabama that very few of us have? Even those who are like, oh, I had a kid that went through, it's different. So, I mean, talk about that.
Yes, and of course, there's all different aspects of education. I got a call last night from a lady from a different part of the state who had some problem that in her school system that she's from our area and asked me, and it was something I could not answer. It was a lot of about education law that I didn't know, but a lot of the experience, like curriculum, what should be in curriculum, what should not be in curriculum, and of course, I had a bill dealing with Common Core to try to get rid of that, and it had a lot of momentum. You know, and the state Republican Executive Committee voted 450-something to 2 to support my bill, and another one, meeting I remember attending, it was a voice vote, and you could audibly hear just one person out of the group against the bill. But yet we had a lot of the special interests in Montgomery that were against it. I sponsored it 3 times. As we got further down the road, and like by the 3rd year, I had less momentum from teachers. I had a lot of teachers at first that were against it, but then you start getting more teachers, new teachers who are being educated in that,
right? They already know the
and yeah. That's all they know is and so that it started to lose a lot of steam to the point now that it's not really an issue now, but it was pretty hot and heavy for a few years. We just could not get the and even if we passed it in the Senate, the speaker at the time had appointed the members of the Education Policy Committee based on how they felt about that bill. So the only person that the only 2 people that were on the committee that were for my bill were 2 freshmen that he didn't know anything about.
Holy
so
cow.
That's the kind of stuff that goes
on. Well, let's talk about, so that was obviously a big issue then. One that gets talked about a bunch is school choice now.
Yeah, yes.
So
yes,
talk to me about school choice from your perspective.
School choice, I think that, you know, a lot of frustration out there with those moms and dads who are both working to pay taxes and to pay tuition, but yet they make just a little bit more than the limit. You know, everybody that makes over this certain amount, 93,000 or 95, whatever it is, they have no, they're not eligible,
right,
and they're frustrated. I mean, this has gone on for 2 years, and supposedly next year is the year if the chairs, the budget, education budget chairs see that there's money for it. So we'll see how that goes.
That was the thing on the money. When it first passed, I looked at it, and I'm no math magician, as Uncle used to say, but I looked at it just back of the envelope, math here, and I said, this is not going to be, we can't finance it with what they're talking about. Then we went into this, it's a, I know we can't say lottery in the state of Alabama, but it's a chance to win.
Right.
That frustrated me, too. If there's this thing that's right for Alabama families, let's say even under the $93,000 cap, if we said this is good and right, limiting the number of people who can get in before it closes out is...
Right. Yeah. Like I said, these are working moms and dads. They're paying their taxes. They're paying for those tuitions, and those are the folks that are making the sacrifices.
But if they didn't get in the first 7 minutes, they got in at minute 8, they don't get it, you know, even the people under the... And I was like, well, wait a second. If this is good and right for people... But it shouldn't have a cutoff, like, oh, sorry, you didn't get, you know, you didn't pick, your kid doesn't get to go because you logged in at 1208 and not 1207 or something like that.
Yeah, it's a lot of frustration out there over that as far as those that were or had been left out. And I think it's going to do well in the upcoming years. You got those parents, their kids are in the 10th grade when it comes out, and They're seniors. They graduate, and then it's available.
So yes, I mean, there's this thing that we've said is good and right, but because of time period, numbers of people let in, that not everybody gets that advantage.
That's right. And that's frustrating. I empathize with them.
You mentioned the money. If there's money for it, let's talk about our state and money. And I've patted them on the back for holding the COVID money to get interest from it till they had to spend it and go through. But, you know, over the years, there's been these, I guess my analogy is, you reach into the jacket pocket you forgot, and there's a $20 bill in there, and you're like, oh, we got some extra money. We can make it through whatever we need to do, go to dinner.
Right.
That has saved the state over the past, right? Something has happened. There's federal money comes in, but we can't use that as a budgeting tool.
No, we cannot, because, I mean, they built up the budget to such a level with the federal money that was infused in, and now that it's gone, what do they do?
Right.
And some programs get left out. But you got to be, you got to look forward, and they're not about to go into any reserve funds, you know.
And I do like the fact that, you know, with that budgeting and reserve funds, we don't go back in the old days of proration.
And that's probably the most important thing. There's a lot of accomplishments that we have made as a Republican majority, but the rolling reserve, putting the limits on yearly spending to make sure that we don't go into proration, it was outstanding. And it's, like I said, we have not gone into proration since we took over, and that's something to hang a hat on. That's very important.
Go to some of the text here too. Texter says Rusty Glover is 100% conservative, the best candidate for his constituents. Let's see. The Wayne said, I'll get to that one. Michael asking, what's this? There it goes. It loads. Michael says, can you ask Coach Glover what's the best way to support his campaign, and also what is his stance? Okay, we just asked on school choice as a legislator, parent, grandparent, and educator. Yeah. Also, is it true that his class from 01 is really his favorite?
I had some great classes, great students, and the best way to help my campaign is to get the word out and to get people to the polls. It's funny for me to even, this could come out of my mouth, that this group is going to spend $2 million on the campaign.
Is that what it is?
But it's going to be somewhere near there, because you got to think they're spending over $20,000 a week on these ads. They're on every, you know, we have three TV news stations, and they're running them every 30 minutes, and they're running them during soap operas and movie game shows. I mean, it's unbelievable. And it's on YouTube. They have mail outs, Facebook ads. It's beyond belief. And but if we get the folks out to the polls, we're going to do well. We've had a lot of polling that's been done that I hear mostly just rumors about from legislators who have, and I feel like that they're somewhat accurate, and that we're way ahead at some point. Sometimes it's a little closer, but I think we have a good lead right now. And if we get our folks to the polls, we'll counter any types of last minute get out the vote on the other side.
Okay. Well, as we close out, one thing you want voters to remember about you as they go to the polls,
that I'm willing to serve. I look forward to serving again and giving everything I have, as I did before. You know, as I mentioned on the commercial, won the NAPI's hardest working legislator 3 years in a row. That was the last years I was eligible. They started that section, that category, my last 4 years, and I won it 3 years. And I look forward not just winning awards, but to work hard to earn the trust of the people in my district. And I feel really good about the accomplishments that we made before.
Great conversation. I appreciate having you in.
Yes, sir.
All right. Rusty Glover, there he goes, coming right back. More of Midday Mobile.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:56. Let me see if I can catch up on some text here before we get the news. This is the Crichton Aristotle. Thank you. Said, hey, Sean, Mobile has more beauty supply stores and schools than we have Dollar Generals. Wow, I didn't know that. Please send Dalton Shirley to Montgomery to investigate the grants. That's a thing there. Wow. Very nice. Thank you. Congratulations on the anniversary of 17 years. A lot of well-wishers here for our 17th birthday here for the station. Thank you. Dirt Digger, always on board here, said, Sean, I'm glad you started the station. You're like your father and like Nick Saban. That's maybe the nicest thing ever said to me, Dirt Digger. And like, if I could be half the man my father was, wow. He said, you know how to get the best talk radio staff. Thank you. I pray for y'all. To get more ramps up and money to reward for what you do for the community. Well, thank you. This one from someone named Billy D. I said, hey, Sean, it's Billy D. Just wanted to say happy birthday to you and everyone else over there. You're all doing a freaking amazing job. Keep up the good work. Well, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And this was just a, you know, it was just an idea. It was weird. I worked at, you know, worked in radio for a long time, in music radio, and I was the rock and roll disc jockey that went out and listened to talk radio on my lunch break sitting out in my trunk. And it was, I said, you know why? I asked that question way back. I said, put talk radio on, it's always on AM. It's never, and it's on these small signals. What if we did it and put it on a real big signal? People were like, you can't do that. Those are for music. You put music on big station. I said, well, what if we did something different? Fire Dog says, you're 17, now time to get a job and start paying me back for that car. I bought you, and clean your room. It smells like dirty sweat socks in there. Yes, that's the 17-year-old angle, isn't it? Oh, my man Wayne said, Wayne Biggs, good afternoon. Wanted to congratulate you on your 18th anniversary. That's, well, we're 17 now. This is an awesome accomplishment. Next Monday, the 8th, Azalea Coffee Service will celebrate its 39th anniversary. Wow, entering into our 40th year of business. Congratulations, Wayne. Appreciate everything you do and the guys there at the station do for Mobile and Baldwin County listening area. Well, thank you. We appreciate you too, Wayne. All right, coming back right after the news, Brett Marquez is going to join us.